This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, Irirangi Tumotu, MPR.
They lie in boot hills all through the West. The outlaws, the gunslingers, the Billy the Kids and worse. Say a fellow like the coward that shot Bill Hickok in the back. There's always one like that in every time of history. Most of them were varmints, but every once in a while in one of them, there may have lived a man.
Good evening and welcome to yet another edition of the Audio Archive. It's Eddie and Glenn here this week. And this week we're changing things up a bit. Totally. We haven't done a story time session for a while, so this is the children's hour. Well, I play a bit of Peter Sellers towards
Why not?
That's not necessarily children's. But the first half of the show, I'm going to showcase the talents of Max Cryer.
Yes.
He was a stalwart of New Zealand light entertainment.
He certainly was,
old Maxie. 60s, 70s, 80s and 90s.
Yes.
Passed not so long ago,
That's right.
I've got an album here called Max Cryer's Story Time. with Mr. Max Cryer as one of New Zealand's most popular and well-known television personalities.
He was.
Yeah, absolutely. But we're going to be playing a bit of Max Cryer, bit of song, bit of story.
Yes.
And some stuff from the kiddie favourites as well. If you wait till the second half of the show, got Sparky and the Talking Train.
Ooh.
All right. I actually did a bit of a survey around various people, and everybody said that Sparky and the Talking Train is the one to play.
Sounds like a must.
Far be it from me to resist public opinion, but we're going to begin the show with a story time from Max Cryer.
Okay, Max.
And this is, I always like the like my Greek classics, so we're going to start the show with the story of Persephone, as told by Max Cryer.
Okay.
Long ago, in the country of Greece, there was a goddess of the cornfields. Her name was Demeter. And everybody believed it was her power that caused the seeds in the earth to sprout and send up green shoots. It was told that she could cause the corn to yellow and ripen. With only a touch, the trees would break into blossom. With just a touch of her hand, the branches would hang low, abounding with ripe golden fruit, and the weather was always warm. All the people and animals depended on Demeter for their food. Sometimes they called her their Earth Mother. Demeter had a beautiful daughter called Persephone, whom she loved more than anything in the world. And because she could not bear to be parted from her, they went everywhere together. One day, Persephone wandered into the forest to gather wild herbs. As she gathered them into her basket, she noticed a flower she had never seen before. She bent down to pick it, but instead, she pulled it out of the ground, roots and all. To her amazement, the earth opened to reveal a huge cavern, and out of the cavern galloped four splendid black stallions, drawing a golden chariot. Standing in the chariot and wearing a golden breastplate was the king of the underworld. His name was Hades. "You will come with me to be my queen and live in the underworld," he said. Persephone protested and tried to run away, but Hades caught her by the arm and lifted her into his chariot. He cracked his whip and rode back into the cavern, leaving no trace of what had happened. When Persephone did not return home, Demeter became very upset. She wandered over the countryside near and far without drinking or eating for 9 days and nights. But she found no trace of her daughter, and even worse, not one person who could tell her what had happened. After many more days of searching, Demeter met a herdsman, who told her he had witnessed the whole thing, and told of the ground opening up and the chariot drawn by four black stallions. "Tell me," asked Demeter, "was there anyone in the chariot?" "Yes," replied the herdsman, "a dark warrior, clad in a golden breastplate, and beside him was a beautiful but frightened maiden." Demeter felt great despair at the herdsman's story, for she now knew that Persephone had been carried off by Hades, the powerful god of the underworld. She also knew there was little she could do to release her daughter. So distressed and angry was Demeter at the loss of her daughter, that she just wandered about the earth, forbidding the corn to grow or ripen or the trees to bear fruit. Soon there was a famine, and all the people and the animals were starving. But still, Demeter would do nothing until Persephone was returned to her. Now the king of all the gods and goddesses was called Zeus, and he promised to return Persephone to her mother, provided Persephone had not eaten any food while in the underworld. At the same time, Zeus ordered Hades to allow Persephone to return home, and he sent his messenger, Hermes, to fetch her. Hades knew he could not keep Persephone unless she ate some of his food, and he'd been unable to persuade her to eat even a crumb of bread. So he went to her, and pretending it was his idea, told her that her mother was fretting for her, and he had decided to let her return home. At once, Persephone smiled at Hades for the first time. She was so happy. Hermes helped her into his chariot, but just as they were leaving, one of Hades' gardeners held up a broken pomegranate.
"I saw Persephone eat 3 seeds from this fruit, Your Majesty," he said.
Persephone grew pale when she heard this, for she knew that Hades now had power over her, and she wished with all her heart that she had not been tempted by the beautiful pink fruit. Hades smiled and told his gardener to go with Persephone and Hermes as a witness. You can imagine how delighted Demeter and Persephone were to see each other again. But when Demeter heard about the pomegranate seeds, she was very sad and dejected. Then she said she would not help anything to grow unless her daughter was returned to her forever. On the other hand, Hades was equally determined not to lose Persephone. The gods were in despair. It seemed that everything on the earth would perish. At last, they thought of an idea. Because she had eaten 3 seeds, Persephone was to stay with Hades as his queen for 3 months of every year. But she must be allowed to return to her mother and the earth above for the other 9 months of the year. Hades and Demeter both agreed to this plan, and so Persephone stayed with her mother for 9 months, and while she stayed, Demeter looked after all that grew in the earth. She touched the corn, and it grew, turned yellow and ripened, and she laid her hands on the trees, and they blossomed, and in time their branches hung low with fruit. But when Persephone had to return to the underworld, Demeter went into hiding, and for those 3 months nothing grew. It was the first winter. But the men and the animals on the earth did not worry, for they knew Persephone would come back, and that all would be well again, and they called Persephone's homecoming spring.
Remember to be kind to cows. Treat them like a friend. Milk them gently day and night, and pamper their rear end.
Never smile at a crocodile. No, you can't get friendly with a crocodile.
Don't be taken in by his welcome grin. He's imagining how well you fit within his skin.
Never smile at a crocodile. Never tip your hat and stop to talk a while. Never run.
Walk away.
Say goodnight.
Not today.
Clear the island.
Never smile at a crocodile.
You may very well be well bred. Lots of etiquettes in your head. But there's always some special case, time or place to forget etiquette. When you're in a boat and he starts to float, never linger just to point a finger down his throat.
Never lag just to chew the rag.
Don't remind him that he'd make a lovely bag. Don't be rude, never mock, throw a kiss, not a rock.
Never, 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 never smile at Mr. Crocodile.
Crocodile. No, you can't get friendly with a crocodile.
crocodile. Don't be taken in by his welcome grin. He's imagining how well you'd fit within his skin.
Smirk with glee at a chimpanzee, 'cause he looks like someone in your family.
But if you meet a croc, throw a kiss, not a rock. Clear the aisle and never smile at Mr. Crocodile.
Yes, if you meet a croc, throw a kiss, not a rock.
Don't beguile, run a mile, never smile at a crocodile.
Never smile at a crocodile.
So true, Max.
Max Cryer from the album Maximilian.
Yes.
With Max Cryer and the Children, with special guest star Ray Columbus.
Oh, yes.
But for the Ray Columbus part of it, you're going to have to wait until
Indeed.
The end of this half of the show.
Be patient.
So you're listening to the audio archive on NPR, yes. Manawatū People's Radio, Te Reo Irirangi o Ngā Tangata o Manawatū. Mm-hmm. It's Eddie and Glenn
Hello.
Here, and we're bringing you some children's stuff.
Why not?
I have quite a good collection of story time. It's one of the things I collect, and they're relatively cheap albums to get as well. Mind you, a lot of them have been, in fact, children-ized,
yes.
so
yes.
You know, I can't vouch for the quality, but these ones seem to be in pretty good fettle.
You're not
so,
bad.
We're going to go on back to the Max Cryer Storytime
yes.
album, Max Cryer Around the World. So this is a West African story. Why ants carry bundles as big as themselves. Enjoy.
On the great plains of Africa lived two farmers. Their names were Anansi, the Spider-Man, and his son, Sin. Every year they had rich harvests of grain, but one year, after the seed had been sown, no rain fell for more than a month. The ground dried up and cracked under the hot sun, and it seemed the seeds would never grow. Each day Tsin looked at the bare, dusty ground and grew full of despair, for if the crops did not grow, his family would surely starve. One day, he saw a small hunchback dwarf sitting at the edge of his fields. "What makes you so sad?" asked the dwarf. "If there is no rain, there will be no crops," replied Sin sadly. "And if there are no crops, we will all starve." "I will help you," said the dwarf. "Just take two small sticks and tap me lightly on the back." Tsin did as he was asked, while the dwarf sang, "Oh, water, go up, up, rain, come down, down." And to Tsin's amazement, it began to rain immediately. Down came the rain in torrents, until all his land was soaked. His seedlings soon sprouted through the ground. Now Tsin's father, Anansi, heard how well his son's crops were growing, but his fields were still dry and bare, and he became determined to know his son's secret. "How is it that your fields flourish while mine are bare and dry?" he asked. Tsin told him the story, and on hearing this, Anansi decided he had better have his crops watered in the same way. "If my son was able to make the dwarf work with two small sticks, then I should be able to make him work twice as hard with two big ones," he thought to himself. So he cut two huge sticks, hid them under his coat, put a miserable expression on his face, and set off to find the dwarf. After travelling some distance, he saw the dwarf coming along the road. "What makes you look so sad?" asked the dwarf. And Anansi told him, and the dwarf said, "Take two small sticks and tap me lightly on the back. Then I will make the rain come down for you." But instead of two small sticks, Anansi took the two large sticks from under his coat and beat the dwarf so hard he fell down dead. At the terror of his evil deed, Anansi became very frightened, for he knew that the dwarf was really the king's favourite jester. He wondered how he could place the blame onto somebody else. He dragged the dwarf to a nearby tree and slinging him over his shoulder, climbed to the top and placed him on one of the topmost branches. He then climbed down and sat under the tree and waited. Presently, Tsin came along to see if his father had succeeded in having his crops watered. "Did you find the dwarf?" he asked his father. "I did," replied Anansi. "But he climbed the tree to pick some fruit, and I'm waiting for him to come down." "I'll go up and bring him down," said Tsin, and he began climbing the tree. But as he reached the dwarf, he accidentally knocked him, and the dwarf fell down to the ground. "Look what you've done," cried Anansi. "You have killed the king's jester." Tsin at once realized his father's trick. "That's all right," he said quietly. "I hear the king is very angry with the dwarf and will be delighted to hear of his death. In fact, I hear he has offered a large reward of gold to whoever gets rid of him. So I'll take the body to the king and claim the reward." "Oh, no, you won't, my boy," shouted Anansi. "I killed him, so I'll take him to the king. The reward is really mine." So Anansi flung the dwarf's body over his shoulder and went with it to the palace. But the king was sad and full of anger when he saw what had happened to his jester. He had the body put into a strong wooden box, which Anansi was condemned to carry on his head forever. As the king was a magician, he cast a spell on the box so that it could only be removed from Anansi if he could find someone who was willing to carry it for him. Of course, no one would do this. Anansi was worn out by his heavy burden. Then one day, he met an ant. "Ant," he said, "will you please carry this box for me while I go to the market to buy goods I need urgently?" But the ant said, "I know your tricks, Anansi. You want to pass your burden on to me." "No, no," cried Anansi. "I promise I'll be back for it." The ant, who was such an honest fellow, always keeping his own promises, believed Anansi. He took the box on his head, and Anansi thanked him and hurried away. Needless to say, Anansi had no intention of keeping his word. The ant waited and waited, and he waited in vain for Anansi's return. As he didn't return, the ant had to carry the box on his head for the rest of his life. And that's why we often see ants carrying bundles as big as themselves.
They lie in boot hills all through the West. The outlaws, the gunslingers, the Billy the Kids, and worse.
Yes, sir, kids, you know who that is. It's your old friend Woody Woodpecker, and he's over at Wally Walrus's house helping him build a rocket ship. Let's listen and see what happens.
You know, Wally, I've always been crazy about rockets and outer space and all that stuff. Instead of just shooting this rocket ship up by itself, why don't I get inside it and go up with it? What do you say, Wally? What do you say?
Oh, no, Woody. Nobody would be crazy enough to take off in my rocket ship.
Oh, yes, they would, Wally. And I'm your boy. Listen. I am a crazy woodpecker, as crazy as can be. I'm a loony, a knuckle-headed nitwit. Completely off my trot, sense of me would be the height of folly. There are bats inside my belfry. I'm balmy as a breeze. And in the hole that's in my head, I always keep my keys. I'm nutty as a fruitcake. The squirrels will get me soon. I blow my top and flip my lid each day at 12:30.
Say, Woody, I know you've been a screwball, as screwy as they make him, but I didn't know you was that crazy. You're used the one to pilot my rocket ship. Get in, Woody.
Oh, I'm in, Wally. Space pilot Woody Woodpecker all set for takeoff. Light the front burners. Light the aft burners. Outer space, Here I come. Great jumping space fish. I sure got off the ground in a hurry. The Earth is so far behind me, I can hardly see it. I must be in outer space. Good galloping galaxies. Something's coming right at me. It looks like a little ball. Ooh, it's getting bigger and bigger. It's a planet. I'm going to crash into it. Oh, gosh, I got to do something. I'll pull this lever. No, I'll try this valve. Oh, it's no use. I can't stop it. I'm going to crash. Oh, my aching head. Oh, where am I? Oh, now I remember. The crash. There's Wally's wrecked rocket ship, and here I am. Gosh, this is a funny-looking place. Everything I see is double. Always two trees growing together. Two suns in the sky. Two roads running side by side. And here comes a guy wearing two hats. Now, how could anyone wear two... Uh-oh. No wonder he's wearing two hats. He's got two heads. This I've got to look into. I'll go over and ask him about it. Hey, mister, what's with this two heads business?
Two heads? Of course. This is double double land land. Everything comes in twos. We even say every word twice. And both are our heads talk at once.
Well, I'll be double darned. Everything comes in twos, eh?
Of course. And you look stupid with only one head.
Oh, is that so? Well, mister, I like it. Just what's wrong with one head?
Well, listen. Two heads are better than one. Any day. That's an old saying you've heard many say. We sing two together, gather which you cannot do. We talk things over much better than you.
Well, you got a point there, but with two heads, you've got two faces. That means you got to wash your face twice every time you wash.
Yes, but we always get double chocolate malts.
Yeah, but you've got four ears to not forget to wash behind instead of two.
Yes, but we get two lollipops at once.
But when you catch cold, you catch it in two noses instead of one. That's practically double pneumonia.
Ho. But we can do our homework, and watch television at the same time.
Do your homework and watch television at the same time? Gosh, mister, you've got something there. How would I go about getting another head? Size 6 7/8.
Why, that's easy. Just stand still while I hit you with this hammer.
Ooh, my aching head. Where am I?
Woody, are you all right, Woody?
Oh, now I remember. I crashed Wally Walrus's rocket ship out in space, and now I've got two heads. I can feel the other one just as plain.
Woody, boy, you haven't got two heads. It's just a big bump you got. You never got to outer space. You just crashed into the brick wall next door, and you've been dreaming.
I never got to outer space? Then why do I talk like this? I am a crazy woodpecker, as crazy as can be. I'm a loony as a goony and as sappy as a tree. Everyone who knows me says I am completely daft, but I do all these crazy things so I can make you laugh.
Oh, the mighty Mel Blanc there.
Good old Mel.
Woody Woodpecker and his spaceship.
Or,
Wally Walrus's spaceship. Yep, thousand voices. And Woody Woodpecker is really annoying.
Is he ever?
He is really annoying.
All right, as a kid, but when you're an adult, different story. Yes.
Right, so we're going to go to the break. One more track, though. So this is, we're going to go back to the Maximilian album. I promised you Ray Columbus before, so this is the one. This is going to be Good Night, Sleep Tight. I'm going to read you the blurb from the album. Good Night, Sleep Tight was first graunched out by Louis Armstrong in the Five Pennies film and became a duet when Danny Kaye joined in. Ray Columbus joins Max Cryer for this version with the children's chorus graunching it out.
Graunching all
right. We'll catch you on the other side of the break, folks.
Time to call it a day, sleep tight, dream your troubles away. Good night, in spite of any sorrow, there's a brand new day on its way. To the end of the clock, play a lullaby in ragtime. You can tell the sad man is on his way by the way that they play, as still as the trill of a thrush in a twilight hush. So you can hear the rhythm of the ripples on the side of the boat as you sail away to dreamland. High above the moon you hear a silvery note as the Sandman takes your hand. So rock-a-bye, my baby, don't you cry, my baby, sleepy time is nigh. Won't you rock me to a ragtime lullaby? Won't you play the music so the brain can rock to a lullaby?
If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. NPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out npr.nz for more information.
And we're back from the break on this particular edition of the Audio Archive, which is story time,
or the
children's hour. So I did a bit of a straw poll around of what people wanted to hear. If I was going to play a story from like people's childhood, for people of a certain age, they used to have the radio requests for the children. So kids would write, and 2ZA would have it. Audrey Green, I remember that.
Yes.
And there was a bunch of different stories that you could write in in request. And the one that everyone has mentioned to me is Sparky in the Talking Train.
Oh, yes.
So fortunately I have Sparky in the Talking Train. So that's the one we're going to go with. Mm. This is from the album Kiddies Favourites Volume 1.
Yes.
I've got Kiddies Favourites Volume 3. That's where the Woody Woodpecker song story before on the other side of the break came from. But the one I'm after is Kiddie Favourites 2, because I think it's got the Flash Gordon one that I'm really, really hunting. Flash Gordon and the Lion Men of Mongo.
Oh,
oh yeah, Mongo Smoke.
The Lion Men, yes,
yeah,
indeed.
So anyway, we're going to go with a goodly dose of nostalgia and all 16 minutes and 25 seconds of Sparky and the Talking Train. Back to your childhoods, folks.
Do you like trains?
There was a little boy once who liked trains. As a matter of fact, he more than just liked them. He loved trains. His name was Sparky, and he lived right near the railroad depot on Station Street. And he was always talking about the trains that went by. He lived so close to them that he could stand in front of his house and wave to the engineer, and then count the cars as they passed. Sparky liked the passenger trains because they went so fast. And he longed someday to ride on one. You see, he never had. Sparky liked freight trains, too, because they were so long and had so many different kinds of cars on them. Sparky even learned the names of the different cars and used to call them out as he watched a freight train go by. Like this.
Boxcar. Tank car. Gondola. Gondola. Boxcar. Refrigerator car. Tank car. Caboose.
Sparky gradually learned a lot about trains from his father, who had a big job with the railroad. And he liked to talk about the things he knew with the other kids in the neighborhood.
Do you know what the big wheels on the engine are for?
Sure, anybody knows that. That's what the engine rides on.
Yeah, who doesn't know that?
Well, the engine rides on them all right, but the big wheels are the ones that have the power. They make the train go. They're called drivers.
Well, if you're so smart, what are those little wheels in the front for?
They're the pony trucks. They guide the train on the tracks and make it go around turns.
Well, what if they do? I'd rather play baseball and talk about trains. Let's go.
Yeah, let's go. Come on, Sparky, let's get up a game.
Well, I'd rather stay here. The express is coming through in a couple of minutes, and I wouldn't want to miss it.
Yes, Sparky would rather watch the express go by than play ball, shoot marbles, or almost anything. And it was a lucky thing that he did stay to watch the express that day, because for the first time, a very strange and unusual thing happened. You see, here's what happened. The express train came on time as usual. And as usual, Sparky stood in front of his house and called out the cars as they went by. Of course, passenger cars this time.
Engine, coal car, baggage, mail car, coach, coach, diner, Pullman, Pullman, observation car. Goodbye!
Goodbye, Sparky.
Said goodbye, Sparky. I heard it just as plain. Mother, Mother, the train, it talked to me. It said goodbye. I heard it. The whistle blew, and it talked to me. Mother, did you hear it?
For goodness sake, what's all the excitement? I'm in the kitchen, dear.
Mother, the train, it talked. It talked to me.
Now, really, what in the world do you mean the train talked to you?
It did. It answered me when I said goodbye. It was in the whistle. Mother, don't you believe me? Don't you believe the train talked?
Well, now look, darling. Trains just don't talk. They're not human. They're just machines, dear.
You see, it was your imagination. You just thought you heard the train answer you.
It was not my imagination. I heard it. I heard it plain as anything.
Now, that's enough of that. We'll talk to your daddy about it when he gets home. Maybe he can make you understand. Now, run upstairs and wash. Daddy'll be home soon, or we're having an early dinner.
But, Mother, the
I said we'd talk about it when your daddy gets home. Now, do as I say.
Yes, Mother.
And poor Sparky went upstairs to get ready for dinner, as his mother had told him to do. But he just couldn't wait for his father to get home, because he was sure he would understand. After all, his father worked for the railroad, and if trains could talk, then his father must certainly have heard them. He could hardly wait, and when he finally heard his father coming up the walk, he ran down to meet him.
Daddy, can't trains talk? Can't they, Daddy?
Talk, Sparky? Well, they make enough noise, but I'd hardly say they can talk.
But, Daddy, I heard it. I heard it just as plain.
Oh, now, Sparky, I think your imagination is running away with you. You're thinking too much about trains.
But, Daddy...
Oh, now, don't be silly, Sparky. Come on, supper's ready, and we don't want it to get cold.
Yes, Daddy.
Poor Sparky. It seems nobody would believe him, not even his friends at school, when he told them about it the next day.
But the train did talk to me. I heard it, it did.
Oh, boy, that's a funny one. Trains talking. Who ever heard of a train talking?
You're crazy, Sparky. You're train crazy. You've been watching those trains so much, you think they talk to you.
All right, if you don't believe me, come on over to the depot and hear for yourself. The local is coming in. Maybe it will talk, too. Come on, if you're so smart.
So Sparky and his friends went down to watch the local come in. The local stopped at the station right by Sparky's house.
I am tired.
Hear that? Hear it?
I don't hear nothing.
Me neither.
Other kids couldn't hear the train talking. Perhaps it was because they didn't like trains as much as Sparky did. Perhaps the trains didn't want anyone else to hear them. Everyone in school talked about it and laughed at Sparky until he could hardly stand it. The older kids teased him and the younger kids pointed at him and giggled. So Sparky didn't play with them much anymore. In fact, he was a pretty sad and lonely boy, and he stopped telling anyone about the talking trains, even his parents. Sparky stayed pretty much by himself after that and said no more about trains. Even his mother and father noticed how quiet he was, and they began to worry about him.
I'm worried about Sparky. He's so quiet and he seems so unhappy.
I know. I've noticed it too.
Isn't there something we can do? Nothing seems to interest him.
I know. He's always wanted to take a train ride. Why don't I take him into town tomorrow on the early train?
That's a good idea. That'll certainly make him happy. Maybe if he rides on a train, he'll forget those silly ideas of his about trains talking. Sparky?
Yes, Mother?
Come in here a minute, dear.
Yes?
Sparky, how would you like to ride to town with me tomorrow on the train?
To town? On the train? Oh, yes, Daddy. Will you take me? Will you really?
That put a little life into Sparky. A ride on the train. He could hardly wait until the next morning. But the time finally came, and Sparky and his dad climbed into the first car where Sparky wanted to ride. It wasn't long until they were speeding along. Sparky was just about as happy as a boy could be.
Daddy, how fast are we going?
Oh, about 50 miles an hour, I guess.
How far is it to town from here?
Well, I don't know for sure, Sparky. About 30 miles, probably.
It's 21 miles, it's 21 miles, it's 21 miles to go.
It's 21 miles, Daddy.
Well, how would you know, Sparky? Here comes the conductor. I'll ask him. How far are we from town, conductor?
Well, we just passed Fair Oaks. It's exactly 21 miles.
That's odd. How could you know so exactly, Sparky?
Well, the train, I just know.
Oh, that's odd. Odd indeed.
Yes, Sparky's father didn't understand it. You see, he didn't know that the train had told Sparky how far it was. And Sparky didn't bother to tell him because he knew it would just make him angry again. So on they rode to town. But a strange and exciting thing was to happen before they ever got there. Sparky and his father sat in the train as it rolled along without talking for a while. All of a sudden, the clicking wheels of the train began calling Sparky.
Help me, Sparky. Help me, Sparky. Help me, Sparky. Help me, Sparky. Help me, Sparky.
What's the matter?
Nothing's the matter. What do you mean, Sparky?
Oh, excuse me. Nothing, Daddy.
A wheel is loose.
Which one?
Sparky, who in the world are you talking to?
Right front wheel.
Daddy, the right front wheel is loose on this car. Stop the train. Tell a conductor. Daddy, please.
Sparky, stop that shouting. What are you talking about? How do you know a wheel is loose?
I know. The train had told... Well, I just know. Please, Daddy, tell a conductor to stop the train.
Sparky, be quiet. Everyone is looking at you. Now, don't tell me the train's been talking to you again and told you it has a loose wheel.
Yes, Daddy, it did. It told me. We have a loose wheel. And there will be a terrible wreck if the train doesn't stop.
Sparky, I've just had enough of this nonsense. Now, you sit down and be quiet. There's nothing wrong with this train, and we're going to be in town in 10 minutes.
But Daddy, you've got to listen to me. You won't do something, I will. I'll pull the cord up there, the emergency cord. That will put on the brakes and stop the train.
Sparky, get down off that seat. Don't pull that cord. Stop. Sparky, stop.
What's the matter? Who pulled the emergency cord? Who stopped the train?
I did, sir.
You did?
Yes, conductor. I'm afraid my son did, and I'm terribly sorry. Now, if you just start the train, I'll see that he's punished when we get home.
Conductor, there's a loose wheel on this train, on the right front. And if you start this train again, there will be a terrible accident.
Sparky, I told you...
Please, Mr. Conductor, please go out and look at the wheel.
What's the matter with this boy, anyway?
Well, he thinks the train was talking to him. It's just his imagination. Now, please start the train, and I'll keep him quiet.
Wait. I'll make you believe me. I can prove that the train talked to me. Daddy, remember I told you when we were 21 miles from town?
Yes, but...
How did I know that?
Well, I don't know.
The train told me. That's how I knew. That ought to show you the train talked to me. And the train told me it has a loose wheel. Daddy, please just take a look and see.
Well, you did say 21 miles when that's just what it was. Maybe we should take a look at that.
Now, you're not going to start that talk, too. I'm going to signal the engineer to go on. I've had enough of this monkey business.
Now, wait, conductor. Here's my card. I'm the Eastern Division Manager of this railroad. and I demand that you inspect the right front wheels on this car.
Well, I guess I have to.
And all three of them went out to look at the wheel that Sparky had said was loose. And sure enough, when they examined it carefully, it was so loose that in another few miles it would have come off, and there would certainly have been a terrible wreck. The conductor, Sparky's father, and even all the people on the train were amazed.
Well, what do you know?
You see, the boy was right.
Why, the wheel really is loose, and just the one the little boy said.
Well, what do you know about that?
The wheel was fixed, and the train went on to town. But by the next day, everybody for miles around had heard about Sparky and how he had saved so many lives. His picture was in all the newspapers, and he was quite a hero. The kids back home no longer laughed at him. In fact, they all wanted to be his friend because he was so famous. The president of the railroad even gave him a medal. It was at a special ceremony at the municipal building.
Sparky, it gives me great pleasure to present you with this medal in appreciation for your service to this railroad. Is there anything you would like that we can give you?
Anything?
Anything at all.
Can I ride in the engine of the express, can I?
Well, Sparky, if that's what you want, you certainly can. It'll be an honor.
And Sparky did. He rode in the engine right up with the engineer and came speeding through town at 80 miles an hour. And he blew the whistle, too. Of course, all the kids in town were there watching when he went past, and he waved to them, and they waved back, wishing that they could ride there, too. He went by so very, very fast.
Come on, Sparky!
And that's the story of Sparky and the trains. He still rides up in the engine occasionally. And if you watch for him, you might see him almost any time. And I'll tell you something else. If you get to like trains as well as Sparky did, and if you listen carefully enough, maybe you'll hear them talk too.
Wow. Sparky and the Talking Train. Wasn't that a dose from the past?
That was pure nostalgia. That was a classic.
Yes. Yeah, very much something of its time.
Good old Sparky.
Well, we're coming up to the end of another edition of the Audio Archive. We've really enjoyed pulling out some old story time stuff
great.
And showcasing
it's been fun.
Max Cryer. And a bit of Woody Woodpecker.
Yes.
Yep, the great Mel Blanc.
Oh, what a guy.
But I got one more thing to play you before we go. But
yes.
Of course, before we go, I always like to thank the good people at MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, Te Reo Irirangi o Ngā Tangata o Manawatu. That would be Fraser, Sam and Hugh. And I'd like to thank you, the audience,
yes,
for listening in. It's like, I'm scratching my nostalgia itch, so I hope you guys have scratched.
Yes.
There's a few people out there scratching
blast
theirs.
Blast from the past, all right.
So, one more track to take us to the end of the show, and this is going to be from the best of Sellers, Peter Sellers,
brilliant.
the great comedian. This is from the 10-inch disc, and I'm going to go out with Auntie Rotter,
his take on
children's radio. So thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you fine folk next week.
Enjoy.
Cheerio.
Children, here is your music for today. That's nice. Well, you know what to do, children. Here is your music for running out of the kitchen. Off you go into the lounge, right up to Mummy. Has she got her back to you? Then out with your Robin Hood sword and plunge it into Mummy's back. With a 1, 2, 3, here is your stabbing music. Now come along, no lazing. Just jump over Mummy, because it's time for our good deed. Saving Grandpa the bother of chopping the firewood. Have you got your little hatchets ready? Good. And here is Uncle Rotter to sing for you.
Sharpen the hatchet and run up the stairs, hide beneath the bed now. One, two, diddly do, and off with Grandpa's head now.
All right, Bill?
Yes. There, now never mind the mess, because it was such fun, wasn't it? And now, off to find Grandma. There she is, hanging from a beam in the kitchen. Oh! I forgot. We showed her our Roy Rogers lasso yesterday, didn't we? Never mind. Give her a push and we'll...
Swing a white hood, a grandma waltz with a 1-2-3, 1-2-3.
But wait! Oh, here comes Daddy up the front path. Wouldn't it be lovely to have two daddies? Well, we can arrange that. Got your little exercise hatchets. Then it's...
Up on a chair behind a door. Hey, diddle-diddle. Here comes Papa, so up with your chopper and split him down the middle.
Now, children, just one last exercise. Take Daddy's keys out of his pocket. Run to his desk. Take out all his money, his bank books, and those stupid old stocks and shares. And hurry along to the Auntie Rotter Home for Orphans, Balls Pond Road, London. Bye-bye, children.
Ta-da, children.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.